Hello, and welcome to the Latent Cassette Podcast, and today I'll be covering Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Before we get to the movie, let's get a little background on the lead. Cassandra Peterson was born on September 17, 1951 in Kansas. She saw a live Vegas show while on a trip and was noticed by the production staff. Immediately upon graduating high school, she drove to Vegas and became a showgirl in the production of Viva Las Girls. She actually met Elvis Presley here, and the two dated for a short time. She had small roles in the James Bond movie Diamonds Are Forever and Working Girls. She was also on the cover of the album Small Change by Tom Waits. She moved to Italy in the 1970s and was a singer in a couple of rock bands and also had a couple small film roles. Upon moving back to the States, she joined the improv comedy group The Groundlings. She auditioned for the role of Ginger in a 1981 Gilligan's Island TV movie, but was passed over. Her big break finally came in 1981, when in the spring, she won the role to play a whore host, beating out over 200 other women. The original vampira, Malia Nirmi, who was a host in the 50s, was involved, but quit after a falling out with the producers. The producers, like Cassandra, craft the image of her character. She, along with friend Robert Redding, came up with a heavy metal valley girl for the persona of Elvira. Nirmi sued over similar looks and catchphrases of the characters, but her vampire and Peterson's Elvira, but she lost and Peterson continued. Nirmi's original vampire character was based on the old cartoons of Morticia Adams, so this is further proof that there were no original ideas as far back as the 1950s. The movie Macabre was first broadcast on KHJ-TV in Los Angeles. Elvira gained national popularity and made appearances on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and other TV shows. She also did Halloween-themed commercials for Coors Light and Mug Root Beer. She guest commentated the LA leg of WrestleMania II. The main event was a steel cage match between Hulk Hogan and King Kong Bundy for the WWF title, and later appeared in commercials for WCW's Halloween Havoc pay-per-views for a few years, starting with the inaugural pay-per-view in 1989. Her popularity reached its pinnacle with her very own movie, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Her co-stars in the movie include W. Morgan Shepherd as chief antagonist and Elvira's great-uncle Vincent. Daniel Green plays a local movie theater owner and love interest of Elvira, a Mr. Bob Redding. Patty is played by Susan Kellerman. Patty is a local bowling alley owner who is also interested in Bob. Edie McClurg plays Chastity Pariah, that joke wrote itself, and Debbie Knows Bitch, basically a Karen type. And she's one of these actresses that have been in a ton of shit. She's one of those people who you might not recognize her name, but as soon as you see her, you know who she is. She plays the same type of bitchy Karen type in all, pretty much everything I've seen her in. William Duell, Pat Crawford, Brown, and Ellen Dunning play the Meekers, local motel owners, and their timid, shy granddaughter, though I think that the man is actually the grandmother's son, so I think he's actually the girl's dad. She's a timid little bitch who's scared of her own shadow. And we have a Kurt Fuller appearance in here. He plays a real estate agent, and this is one of the first movie his first movie roles. And at last, we have Ira Heiden, who played the paralyzed nerd in A Nightmare on Elm Street 3. This movie has a decent amount of characters, but these are more or less notable ones. Peterson had a hand in writing the movie alongside Sam Egan and John Paragon. James Signorelli directed, and James B. Campbell did the music, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Hanania Beer was the cinematographer, and share a last name, and I've never seen anyone famous with it before, except for like Beerman, who was a player for the Falcons, so that's pretty cool. New World Pictures and NBC Productions were the production companies responsible for bringing us this little ditty, and New World Pictures distributed it. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, was released on September 30th, 1988, and made just $5.5 million against a roughly $7.5 million budget. We start off with some awesome 80s synth-esque music to accompany the new World Pictures logo at the outset. We see the ending of the 1956 film It Conquered the World, and it's the ending of Elvira's horror show that she hosts. She wraps up the show, lampooning the movie, and the stagehands hurry to get the set ready for the news. One of the producers introduces Elvira to the station's new owner, a fat, sloppy-ass-looking cowboy wannabe bitch. He starts sexually harassing Elvira, and she just brushes it off until he grabs her tits and says, this awesome line, "It's milking time." No doubt he is remembering some fun times he had on the ranch with his cows. She bitches him out and pushes him onto the news desk, which collapses under his 2,000 pounds. All of this was broadcast on air, by the way. And in her dressing room, Elvira tells her manager she quits, and she asks him about a show she hopes to launch in Las Vegas. And Manny, the manager, tells her the Flamingo wants $50,000 to help launch the show. Just then, very coincidentally, someone brings her a telegram informing her of her great aunt's death and to come to Falwell, Massachusetts to pick up her inheritance. They're clearly going for camp, as she does remark of like, "Oh, talk about the timing." We see her looking bereaved at the will reading. In this reading, she gets everything, and it turns into a Price is Right type of game show set with the lawyer turning into a host and showing her everything she won. It was like a Jeep, a bow, a dinette set. But back in reality, she prepares for her cross-country journey. We get the opening credits as we see her driving across the country, including a funny bit of a gas station attendant smoking by the pump. He makes Elvira pump her own gas, and she puts the pump back, but it isn't secure, and it falls down, spilling gas everywhere. She remarks that the cigs will kill him before she drives off. He tosses the half-smoked cigarette and walks away and into the gas station. And as he does, we see in the background while Elvira's driving off, the pump explodes, the gas station explodes, and he goes up in a fiery inferno. We also get a funny visual of a hot dog Elvira's eating falling into her cleavage. She waves at some Amish, and she gets a ticket for speeding. It's a little 2-minute montage, but it's not bad. She reaches the quaint little town of Falwell. Everyone is staring at her as her music blares, and her car finally breaks down. She meets Chastity, who insults her. Elvira throws some shade right back at her, and three local hornball teens help her push her car to the garage. And it's here we get our first sexual comments type, you know, double entendres, and this movie is chock full of them. So if you like that kind of shit, you'll like this movie. She arrives at the motel when the old bitch who owns it doesn't want to let her rent a room, and the guy, I guess, that it's her son, agrees to let her have one anyway. And this bitch yells at her granddaughter for having makeup on. And when the son goes to show Elvira the room, she doesn't let him, but she sends the granddaughter to do it, so she does. And Elvira tells Robin not to worry about her grandmother. And Robin tells her the only thing to really do is hang out at the bowling alley when Elvira inquires about what they're, you know, if anything goes on in that town. Everyone stares at her again as she enters the bowling alley, and the two sleazeballs put the moves on her. After they ask her for a blowjob, blatantly, this is the one time where they're like, "How about a blowjob?" She pours their beers onto their laps. They grab her and, I guess, plan to beat her up or rape her in the middle of this fucking bowling alley like a couple of psychos. 80s movies are chock full of people about to beat people up or rape fucking people right in the broad daylight. It's a weird trope, I guess, that you could get away with that type of shit back then. However, another patron comes over and helps Elvira subdue her would-be attackers, and it's Bob the theater owner. Patty, the alley owner, comes over and victim shames Elvira and blames it all on her. Elvira leaves with Bob, and the two chat. Bob is real dense as she clearly first flirts with him and goes for a kiss, but he just hops in his truck and leaves her standing on the sidewalk like a fucking lamppost. Idiot. Either that or he was intimidated, either way. At the attorney's office the next day, we meet Elvira's great uncle Vincent, who is quite pissed upon learning of her existence. Elvira is quite upset at just getting a house, a dog, and a book of recipes. Vincent gets nothing, which is rather hilarious because the his sister's caretaker and driver each got 5K at least. We see Vincent getting driven home by the two goons from the bowling alley. They pull up beside Elvira, and he says the only thing he wants is the book. He was a real prick in the will reading, but now he's being real nice and real kind of sweet and smooth to her. He wants that fucking book. The lawyer takes Elvira to the very creepy looking house. Chastity tries to corner Vincent because she found out he's related to her, and there was kind of a funny thing whenever Vincent had Elvira pulled over on the side of the road before Chastity walked by and saw her talking to him, but she couldn't hear anything. But Vincent offered her $50 for the book, and Elvira goes, "Oh yeah, I'll do it for $50." And Chastity's supposed to think it's prostitution. Elvira gets the book, and she shaves the poodle in the house to look like a punk rocker type. There's a knock at the door, and the dog hides the book. And it's Vincent. Elvira tries to pinch Vincent to buy the house, and he angrily refuses, and he gets even more pissed that she can't find the book. And there's this whole thing with Vincent getting pissed that she can't find the book. Elvira wants to sell the house, and we're made to believe that Vincent has a lot of money, so I mean, it's 50K that she wants at least, so if it costs 50K, if the book is that damn important to him, you'd think he'd pay it. Later that night, as she prepares for bed, the three hornball teens wait outside of the great aunt's house to try and sneak a peek. We see Elvira in lingerie, but nothing too revealing. She goes into the bathroom, and then she comes out with like one of those mask, green mask type things on to help pores or whatever the fuck. And she opens the window, and she scares herself and the teens. They tell her they are there to help her fix the house up, and she tells them to come back when it's light, and they fall to the ground. They rejoice that they were able to get a picture of her tits. Later that night, Elvira awakens to someone saying her name. She goes up to the attic and is startled by her aunt's ghost. Alas, it was just a dream. Nice nod to her former real-life beau, though, as she is wearing an Elvis t-shirt. And there's also a painting of her grandmother in the house that looks like the real-life Cassandra Peterson. If you don't know what Elvira looks like without makeup, she's a redhead. And this painting looks just like how she would look. The next morning, the kids arrive to help, and we get gratuitous shots of her spandex-covered ass. Not that I'm complaining. When some kids arrive to help, she delivers my absolute favorite line of the movie: "Grab a tool and start banging." We get montages of more kids arriving to help, and one of the jock type kids who's one of the hornball teens has kids pay, so he's basically pimping out Elvira, helping fix up her house, and Twist and Shout, I believe, is playing over this. That's important for a little a pretty stiff comment from Chastity later. Robin's grandmother's walking by, and she sees Robin there helping. And she does the old school thing of grabbing her ear and pulling her and bringing her with her. At the end of the workday, Elvira is impressed with the rainbow colored paint job on the house. She drops a tray of lemonade and says it's perfect. We see a town hall meeting where all the adults are bashing Elvira, and the school principal threatens to expel students if they are caught around her. Talk about an overstep, Principal Hitler. How the fuck do you have any authority to expel kids based on who they talk to in their personal life? Yeah, the definite overstep. And Chastity, she makes a comment that while they were painting, they were listening to jungle music, so take that however you want. She's a racist, obviously. Their photo was confiscated at school that day, which is pretty odd, seeing how the kids were supposedly at Elvira's house all day. The principal shows the photo that he confiscated in the boys' bathroom, so I guess they were in there beating off or jerking each other, whatever the fuck, and took the picture. They all pass it around and get a real eyeful. Later that day, Kurt Fuller, who plays a real estate agent, we've seen him at this meeting, arrives and he puts the moves on Elvira to help her sell the house, and she promptly throws him the fuck out. No one shows up to her open house that night, and Manny calls her freaking out that they will lose the show if she doesn't come up with the money pronto. She applies for jobs in town, but no luck, as these people are freezing her out, or whatever you want to call it. Fucking Quakers. Vince and Stooges search the house for the book until they see the shadow of a huge dog and leave. They tell Vincent they looked but can't find the book, and he orders them to go to the courthouse and retrieve all the town ordinances. Elvira walks by the theater while Bob is changing the marquee. He drops a letter on her, and he tells her about Chastity turning the town against her. He also tells her he would hire her, but he is barely scraping by. He's only allowed to sell G-rated movies. And there's another funny visual here of the theater marquee is how to. And he has matinee above the title of the movie. And Elvira says, oh, there's only one E in matinee. And she gets it down, goes up the ladder, pulls the E off. And when she goes to step down, she falls and her hand with the letter smacks it. And it looks like it's how to fuck. At least that's what Chastity fucking sees. And she passes out. This bitch has never been touched in her life. Which, I don't know, I imagine cocks shriveling up at the sight of seeing Chastity walking by. After this whole fucking thing, though, Elvira lays a big kiss on Bob, which Patty sees, and she's a teensy bit upset over. We see Vincent watching them, and he goes to a secret door in his bookcase. He walks back a hallway and comes to this weird sort of table with weird shit on it. He's a warlock basically, and this is warlock things. Candles, and he talks to his dead sister. We see all the teens looking bummed at the bowling alley. Elvira arrives and tells them she is hosting a midnight screening of one of the worst movies ever made. They tell her about the principal and what he'll do to them if they're caught associating with her. And she lays on a really dramatic act, saying she's going to kill herself pretending to cry until they all agree to come to her show. Then she's back to normal, perky, great, see you there, and walks out. Patty overhears this and looks like she has a menacing plan up her sleeve. We see some of the kids sneaking out to the show, and we also see Patty sneaking into the theater. She has one of the kids, Elvira, that is, hang a bucket of glitter, which she plans to dump on herself after the movie, in sort of like a Flashdance type homage. They all watch Attack of the Killer Tomatoes as Elvira gives some running commentary. Robin looks more like a regular kid of the 80s as opposed to her Little House on the Prairie look, so good for her, I guess. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes thankfully ends. Elvira does her Flashdance bit-esque scene on stage, but when she pulls the rope, she gets covered in tar. Patty switched the buckets, and then Patty drops a bunch of feathers on her. Bob and two of the teens, one of them's Robin, I can't remember what the other one is, it's the jock type kid. They wait for Elvira in her house. Elvira's in the bath, bathing with gas to get the tar off her, and when she comes out, she starts getting wet for Bob after she sees him bend over and sees his butt, so eventually butts get her fucking sopping wet. She sends the teens home, and we cut to some time later, and Bob and Elvira are watching the TV on two opposite ends of the couch. Dude is either gay really can't take a hint, or is a virgin. Probably virgin. Elvira finds the book in the couch cushions, and she aggressively puts the news on Bob. He says he is hungry, and he gets the hint, so yeah, virgin. That's when he tells her he's hungry, so he don't have to show her his wee-wee. And Elvira uses the book to try and make something to eat. Weird ingredients, as one of them is a fucking nightcrawler. She goes way over all the recommended serving sizes, and she brings the casserole out. It's old weird writing, and it looks like it says casserole, so she assumes that's what it is. A hand puppet monster pops out and tries to attack them. They're able to get it into the kitchen and kill it in the garbage disposal. The dog Gonk, as Elvira renamed him. He had some kind of long name before. Or she, whatever it is. But Gonk grabs the book and they follow the pooch to the attic. Gonk leads them to a chest and scratches at it. Elvira opens it and they find all kinds of weird shit inside, including a letter to Elvira from her aunt. In the note, we learn that Elvira's mother was a witch, and that Vincent killed her, and he is evil and wants the book. We get a hilarious visual of a baby dressed up like Elvira with the wig and the makeup and the dress, and it's quite funny. She reads a spell she thinks will make her money because it has moolah in the name, and the spell she conjures, a snake comes, and at first she thinks it's Bob's dick. She feigns being afraid, and it's heavily implied her and Bob finally fuck. She throws the snake down, and it, like, bursts into flames, and she tells Bob she is scared, and he goes to, like, lay her down, and she looks at the camera, gives a little wink, and they had a lantern on, she turns the lantern off. So, he got him some. Or she got her some, I guess, actually. The next day, the children look miserable at the Fallwell Morality Club picnic, and at a club picnic like that, I would be too. Elvira sneaks in and drops off a casserole dish, and that disgusting pig Chastity sticks her finger in it and takes a fucking bite. Talk about fucking not, you know, socially acceptable in 2020, especially with all this shit going on. Sticking your finger in a fucking casserole for everybody. Cunt. Elvira watching this and is upset because it didn't seem to have worked. And she says it must be because she substituted something with Hamburger Helper. It seems to be a sex potion or something, as it seems the whole town is having an orgy. Vincent arrives and offers $500 for the book, but Elvira refuses and he vows revenge. Chastity actually does have a funny line here, as one of the guys is laying on the ground and she's wearing a dress and she says, "Is this seat taken?" and sits on his face, which probably the funniest thing she actually did in the whole movie. Later at the town meeting, they all accuse each other of sexual harassment and argue until Vincent shows up. He tells them it's all Elvira's fault. He offers a solution, though. There is a law in the town's history that dates all the way back to the Salem witch trials, and the charge is witchcraft. Because, you know, people believed witches were still real in 1988. Elvira is arrested and is going to be burned at the stake that night, because, like I said, laws from the 1600s hold up in the 1980s. She sends Bob to get the book that she hid under the floorboard. The townspeople prepare the Elvira barbecue as the kids assemble on top of the jail. And being at the stake isn't exactly due process. Bob gets the book but is attacked by Vincent and his goons before he can even make it out of the house. Gonk, who is in the jail cell with Elvira, freaks out and turns into a mouse and leaves. As a priest comes there to save Elvira, I mean, he grabs her tits too, so there's that. The kids come crashing through the cell beside her. They're already locked up, so they're taken care of. Gonk turns into a Rottweiler and chews the rope off of Bob's hands, freeing him. The priest and the cops lead Elvira to the stake to carry out the sentence. The chief grabs one of the torches to carry out, but Patty tells him to light it in several places so it'll catch all over. Bob shows up and attempts to rescue her. Elvira realizes her ring has powers, and she frees herself and has a massive rainfall come down, putting the fire out. Her and Bob kiss before he informs her Vincent has the book. Vincent looks even older than he did before, and he turns Chastity and a couple of council members into pigs. Yeah, it looks like the actor has a bunch of aging makeup on or some kind of prosthetic, because his face looks real fucked up. Vincent confronts Elvira and Bob in an alley. However, he handles Bob easily and tosses Gonk into a dumpster. And all of a sudden, the plot dictates Gonk doesn't shapeshift anymore because Gonk, as a poodle, tries to attack him instead of the Rottweiler, the way Vincent walks with a cane in the movie, and he always looks, you know, like a good stiff breeze might blow him over. I mean, even here he walks kind of, soft. I don't know, softly is the word, but he walks very gingerly. Elvira goes to use her ring, but it flies off her hand, and it goes onto Vincent's finger naturally, so she takes off running. She emerges looking like a sexy soldier, like a female Rambo. She shoots some guns at him to no avail. She takes off again and winds up in a cemetery. She falls, and as Vincent is about to finish her off, she throws one of her stilettos at him, and the point sticks to his fucking head. The heel, I guess you could call it. In another great visual, she uses her chest to pop open a locked gate and leaves. Back at the house, one of his creeps put the moves on her, but she throws leeches, I guess, in his face, neutralizing him. Vincent's hands break through the wall and grab her, but she uses one of the swords to chop his hands off. He sets fire with his breath. Yeah, that's the thing that happens. I guess he hasn't brushed his teeth in quite a while, or he ate some bad pussy. He steps on a loose floorboard that hits him right in the dick. She stabs the shit out of his hand that got chopped off she stabs it with a crochet needle. She takes the ring off and blocks Vincent's power he aimed at her, and shoots it back at him, and it kills him. She escapes the house as it burns around her. The next morning, her and Bob, who has a neck brace on, sit on the porch of her aunt's home. Gonk, hilariously, has a mini doggy neck brace on as well. Her insurance won't cover acts of demons, it turns out, so she is fucked and not in the way she would like. We see the mob coming and they look angry again, but they arrive and they apologize to her. The mechanic brings Elvira her car. Patty even apologizes. The lawyer comes and tells her she is the sole heir of her uncle's estate, and alas, she is rich. We cut to her show in Vegas where she sings and dances, complete with some rapping and nipple tassels. We see Manny, Gonk, and Bob watching excitedly. She bids us unpleasant dreams, and that's a wrap. The positives are that this movie knows exactly what it is, and it doesn't take itself too seriously. The movie reeks of the 80s and has lots of sex humor and camp, and I'm here for all of it. Negatives: it is a bit over the top at times, and some of the effects are dated, but you can't help it with these old movies from the, you know, 80s and 90s. The effects, compared to our standards today, are gonna look dated or rough, whatever. But that's the thing you can say about all these old movies. But overall, this movie is weird, kind of stupid and pointless, ridiculous, but I love it. It's a definite thumbs up. Cassandra Peterson has expressed interest in making a sequel, and she just did this a few years ago. I believe she was going to try and pitch it everywhere she could. Nothing has come of it since. I say just leave it alone. Let it live out as a standalone, and it was a perfect time for this movie. And it has attained cult status. And a lot of these times they'll make sequels like they made the Blade Runner. I'm not comparing this to Blade Runner in any way, but a lot of times when you make sequels 30 years later, these classic movies, it just doesn't. It's just not the same. She Elvira did Cassandra Peterson did do a standalone movie in 2001, Elvira's Haunted Hills. Maybe I'll cover that one next year. We'll see what happens. Since it's a stand, I don't always do standalones back to back with, the first movies. But it might be worth doing. I've actually never seen that one. I actually have met Cassandra Peterson. She was at a Comic-Con in Monroeville, Pennsylvania, which is about 10, 15 miles outside of Pittsburgh, give or take. And she was very, very nice. Tried to make small talk. She was cool. Next week, we'll jump forward to the 90s with 1995's Casper. So, join me next time as I cover Casper on the Latent Cassette Podcast on our March towards Halloween.